Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Wes.
Also, this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the official show for the month of January 2022. So, we will talk about a little bit of news as well as new releases and then preview the next month going forward, which will be February of 2022. But there's not a whole lot of news, but one really big thing did happen. And we're going to jump right into it. So Microsoft is on a quest to buy the world. They're going to try to buy the world. And they're starting with Activision Blizzard. They have an agreement to purchase them. And I think the number was $68.7 billion. We actually talked about this really briefly at the end of the last show, where I gave the analogy, like, if you, as an individual person, got $100,000 a day, it would take you, I think the number was like 1,882 years to make $68.7 billion. So it's a lot of fucking money. Sure. By some accounts, I haven't fact checked this, but by some accounts, it is like 40% or something of their annual revenue. That doesn't mean their annual profit. That just means like the annual amount of money that they bring in. So they're spending a lot of money to pick up this big publisher. I think in the top five, maybe the definitely the top 10 of the biggest publishers of games, video games in the world. So what do you guys think? Hot takes on this thing that like that won't actually finish happening until 2023 is I think when they're going to attempt to close.
They must be stopped. This is getting out of hand, guys.
Yeah, this is scary.
Yeah, it seems like everything is just going to eventually become one monolithic organization, and it won't be Monolith or Monolith Soft.
On the other side, World of Warcraft may get good.
We'll circle back onto that topic, Wes, but I think like your guy's sentiment, I totally agree. Like, we're getting to a point where this is genuinely scary, where all of these big fish are getting swallowed up by the even bigger fish, and we're getting to a point where this is, you know, the symptoms of late stage capitalism, where we're now like serving the corporate overlords rather than being like a self governed. Like, post apocalyptic kind of stuff.
Well, it's not to say though that there isn't space for indie developers to do their thing though. Mm. Like, this isn't impeding it from happening. All it's doing is saying if you make a product. I mean, like something like Minecraft, right? Like, didn't Minecraft sell for some ungodly amount of money? And that's a relatively small project. Like, you or I could conceivably create the next game that's worth $1 billion. We just need to find the right audience, you know, and then kind of send it up the chain, I guess. Again, I don't necessarily think this hurts. This doesn't hurt anybody except people that want really large budget AAA titles to be made by diverse teams.
I think to your point about independent games, like, sure, there are still ways to make games independently of these big publishers. It does strike me as also a little bit scary that the end goal of making an independent project like Minecraft is to eventually then sell it to one of the corporate overlords in order to make money. And I don't think that's necessarily what the independent game scene is all about at this point. Maybe the mobile game scene.
No, I don't mean to say that it is. I just mean to say that they don't cease to exist because of this acquisition.
I think that that is a good thing. I think a lot of the most interesting things in games are happening in the independent space. They're filling a lot of the void as bigger publishers get swallowed up and publishing companies are focusing on like the big tentpole releases. Independent games do a lot to fill out the library with a lot of stuff that would have been like mainstream physical releases on systems like the Super Nintendo or the N64 or even the GameCube. Like, the independent games have grown so large in scope that the line between like what qualifies as an indie game or what qualifies as a game is a lot more blurred than it used to be.
Oh yeah, like, we're in an era now where mobile games get just hundreds of millions of dollars in budgets too. Like,
yeah, including the ones that Microsoft now owns, because part of their Activision Blizzard purchase was the mobile game maker King. when they do Candy Crush.
Yeah, so I was just noting that, you know, even mobile games now get crazy large budgets. So, you know, it's just part of the way games are consumed now. So, and it says something that Blizzard is worth that much. Like, they're not, that maybe they're buying it, you know, that you could argue that they're buying it over value, but the company's still worth tens of billions of dollars. And, you know, that's all built upon their expected revenue stream. So, you know, they're bringing a bunch of high profile titles with them.
I would argue that they probably did overpay. And I'm sure that, you know, to a certain extent, Microsoft will probably also own up to it. It's like, hey, we overpaid, but, you know, we have the money to do it. So we might as well. You know, they might have, this might have been in the works for a while. Some of the conversation around this acquisition has been like, Microsoft, you know, smelled the blood in the water. Activision Blizzard's been going through, you know, some scandal. They seemed vulnerable to being acquired. So they finally just threw up the white flag and let it happen. But, you know, to Wes's point earlier about World of Warcraft, there's also been a lot of conversation about what Microsoft can do in order to bring back stuff or restore things to a better state than they are currently at Activision Blizzard. For example, fixing World of Warcraft, bringing back franchises that haven't been seen in a while on Microsoft platforms, letting like Vicarious Visions do Tony Hawk again, something like that. I think that it is, let's say, very optimistic to assume that the kind of lower or mid-tier sort of franchises that people would like to see return from Activision Blizzard, that then Microsoft is just going to make it happen because Microsoft has the goodness in their heart to say, hey, here's a thing that people might want that might not sell all that much. Let's just go ahead and do it.
See, that part, no. World of Warcraft, I mean, they're going to do something with it, obviously. It's World of Warcraft, for crying out loud. But, I mean, making it better or worse, I have no idea. But bringing something back that hasn't been around, I mean, that's a kind of a... That's pretty far-fetched. If it's not making money, then why would they bother with it?
Yeah, it's not Microsoft's MO. They close studios when they make games that aren't making money. And to your point about World of Warcraft, yeah, that's still a big moneymaker. And they look at like competition like Final Fantasy XIV, things that make a lot of money. Like, we already have this product in place. Let's get it back up to snuff and continue making money on it.
Yeah. So they'll do something with WoW, but, I mean, other than whatever is making the money, like... Yeah. The big stuff for Hearthstone right now would be, but they have something with Call of Duty.
I mean, Diablo 4 is like probably about a year
Diablo.
Away. Like, that's going to be huge.
Yeah, Diablo's going to be big. World of Warcraft, Hearthstone.
They announced another... They've put some splash images. They've announced another game that's coming out. Like a brand new, unrelated thing.
Yeah.
No one really knows what that's going to be. I mean...
Oh, that survival game?
Yeah.
Yep. So, there's some kind of survival game.
You've got Overwatch 2. That's supposed to be due some point
coming
up. I mean, they got a lot of stuff on deck. It's not like the company wasn't working on games. It sounds like poor leadership there was hampering their development, and I'm sure COVID didn't help. But
Also the lawsuits and the acquisitions.
Yeah, you know, poor Jen O'Neill. She probably missed a big parachute there. You know, if she had just hung around for a couple of months.
Friend of the show, Jen O'Neill, is better off. Yeah. No, and I there's this other thing that people are talking about, like how Microsoft can help the situation at Activision Blizzard, and it really is very gross to me, and it has to do with the sort of toxic and harassment-filled work environment at Activision Blizzard, with a lot of the allegations and the lawsuits happening right now. Like, oh, Microsoft will come in and they'll clean things up and get it to be a better work environment again. And I think it is really repugnant to depend on our corporate overlords to stop a culture of rape. Like, we, as a self-governing nation, should be able to handle those things, and we should not be looking to Phil Spencer to fix it for us. I just find that concept really vile. It puts a lot of power into the hands of very few people.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that this stuff happens at Microsoft as well. Again, I'm sure that it's another industry that's very male-dominated. You know, it's like whatever happened at Blizzard, it happens everywhere, even if it's not on front-page news on the tech section. It's, yeah. I'm sure every game studio that employs at least 100 people is probably dealing with it to some extent. So even Nintendo, our beloved Nintendo, I bet you there's their fair share of creepers within that organization too.
I'm going to be very sad when we find out. I'm going to have so many conflicted emotions about it.
But they make kid games.
So there's some other topics that I think that we should address when it comes to this particular purchase or acquisition of Activision. There's been some speculation I've heard in some discussions and other podcasts about what Microsoft is doing here. Are they playing some sort of prevent defense by acquiring this big publisher to keep people like Amazon, Google, Apple out of this console publishing space? I think that it is a little bit, I don't know, also a little bit dystopian to think that, like, hey, they're going to buy up this big publisher so they don't get acquired by something else. And I don't really think that's Microsoft's MO either. I think when you look at, you know, the other bit of the big four tech companies with Amazon, Google, Apple, and maybe you include something like a Facebook in there as well, I don't think that they have proven any sort of competency within the gaming space. Apple seems completely content with doing their Apple Arcade and all their iOS stuff. Google has their Stadia and is completely willing to just pull the plug on any sort of gaming venture as it comes up. And Amazon is trying to do their own gaming thing in their space, but again, has not yet shown any sort of competency. So I think it's a little bit
New World was a kind of big flop.
I think it is very speculative to say, like, hey, they're just trying to keep other people out. I think...
Well, that was an observation I heard about it, too, was someone was just like, so what, Microsoft acquired them? Are you telling me you'd rather Tencent acquired them? You think this company is going to be in better hands with Sony? Like what was the outcome that you wanted here? It's with Microsoft. It's probably the most vanilla organization they could land with.
Yeah. I mean, overall, it's fine. It's just the implications of it. Like, what else are they going to buy out? What else is going to become exclusive? What else is...
Yeah, I mean, Sony better open the pocketbook if they want to compete.
Mm-hmm. That's another horrifying idea to me as well, the sort of arms race to acquire everything. But to your points, Ryan and Wes... What would I prefer to happen? Would like Facebook or someone to acquire them? No, I definitely wouldn't prefer to happen.
You want Nintendo to acquire them?
No, definitely not. My preferred outcome is that they just go away. If they're a company that can't like survive in the conditions that they're in with all the allegations, all the scandals, and you know, if they're not making money, then just go away. You know, that's kind of what capitalism demands. If you can't cut it, you're done.
Blizzard's not being saved here. Like, Blizzard was fine on their own,
right?
Like, nobody's preventing the closure. This isn't preventing the closure of Blizzard or Activision. They were going to be fine on their own. It's just this is a way for them to become much more profitable.
And probably, I just don't want a monopoly.
Yeah, and probably make their releases a lot more polished and stable. I think will make a better product for them. I mean, again, I'm not saying I feel like I'm making it seem like this is a good thing that this is happening. I don't know. Like, there are worse things that could happen.
Like, Sinbad could get another show.
Hey, you motherfucker, don't you quote Freakazoid on this podcast.
Again, or Tencent could acquire them and convert everything into microtransactions. Like, is that what you want? Like, you'd have to buy... You'd literally be buying minutes and, wow, you know, $100 for 10,000 minutes or something.
But Microsoft's not above that sort of thing either. Let's not pretend that Microsoft won't nickel and dime you. Tencent might be worse.
Yeah. I mean, but they wouldn't be doing anything that's outside of Blizzard's current model. for a lot of their games. I mean, like, Diablo 2 Resurrected is, you know, one of the few games that I play on that are coming out of them, but that's all, you know, you buy it and you're done. You're not buying cosmetics or wings or anything like that. I think, yeah, it's the people that probably are playing other games like Overwatch that would be, you know, at risk of getting into this sort of pay-to-play kind of scenario. But, again, that's neither here nor there. Like, we'll see. I think that's the other thing. We're still... It's not till 2023 that this even takes place, so Blizzard's going to keep staying on rails. Yeah.
Yeah. If it ends up happening, I don't have any reason to believe that our system of regulations or government regulators will do anything to stop this. I don't have any confidence in that at all, so I think this is going to happen.
Yeah.
But like that goes to like the sort of discussions they've had about games being exclusive. And, you know, Microsoft is going to approach this the same way they approached games like that they acquired when they bought Bethesda. Games that are currently announced for other platforms will still go to other platforms. They're doing a lot of the PR lip service, and it's the exact same lip service that they gave when they bought Bethesda, where they're sort of being real coy and building up people's hope that maybe those games will continue to be multi-platform going in the future. They will not. Microsoft... again, like, just like when they bought Bethesda for $7.5 billion, when you pay $68.7 billion for a company who was already putting their games on your platform, you're not paying to get a piece of the pie of games on multi-platform systems. You're paying for exclusivity. That's what you're buying.
I think it's conditional. I think that's conditional. I don't think that's necessarily 100% true, though. I think that's conditional upon how successful Sony is. If Sony's still, if this really doesn't have that big of a hit on Sony, then yeah, that's what you're going to see a lot of these. Like, of course, they're never going to release Halo on a fucking Sony console. But sure, like, it probably will just be more like a timed exclusive, 6 months, a year down the line. They'll eventually get the games. But if they can really put the nail in the coffin, if they can make Sony's PlayStation the Dreamcast to the PlayStation 2... If they can kind of just put it in the basement, then yeah, they'll never let them see these games. They'll just totally cut them out of that market.
Unless they can put Game Pass on PlayStation. And I think if Game Pass ends up on PlayStation, that really is the nail in the coffin for Sony systems. Because then people are just getting Game Pass on a PlayStation box and really reduces the reason to buy the actual games.
There would be kind of a bittersweet irony to it all that with how we've covered the N64 and how we've complained about the N64's treatment relative to the PlayStation, that PlayStation would literally be in the same scenario that they put Nintendo in 20 years prior.
You know, and Microsoft done a lot of acquiring. They've done a lot of buying their way into getting like these franchises, and I think that that goes back to like why it is that they're doing what they're doing, or like they're playing some sort of prevent defense if they're just doing it because they can. I think when you look at this sort of acquisition for almost $70 billion, like, what is it that they need? What did they need that compelled them to pay all this money? And what Microsoft has needed for quite some time now is exclusives. And that's what they've been buying when they've been taking up all these companies like Activision Blizzard, like Bethesda, like Obsidian, like Double Fine. They're buying exclusives. They're buying things that are going to be on their platform. That's why PlayStation sells. That's why PlayStation has been the lead platform in the PS2 era, in the PS4 era, and now in the PS5 era. Like, they are, when it comes to like the high-end, high-tech platforms, they're the lead platform. So Microsoft is trying to buy their way into a win.
It's funny because Microsoft can't make good exclusives on their own, so they got to steal the other stuff.
Yep.
I mean, what's the last time Microsoft made a good exclusive? I mean, the Halo franchise. That's really the only one that comes to mind. I mean, they had the Gears of War. It's like, who cares?
But when was the last time you saw, like, Gears of War, or it was, like, a big, like, hot ticket item? Like, people were really into Gears of War. It was, like, the 360.
No. Nobody really cares about. I mean, they're at Gears of War 5, but even then, that's been out for a little while now, and that went cheap quick. Mm-hmm. It did not take long for that price drop in it.
What was that mech game that they tried? Was that multiplayer?
Mech Warriors.
Nah, mech Warriors. Not Mech Warrior.
I mean, they own the rights to that. That's a Microsoft thing.
Been doing a lot with that, haven't they?
They should do more with it. Come on. Right. I miss Mech Commander.
But that goes back to our point of, like, are they going to bring back these long-forgotten franchises? No, they have their own long-forgotten franchises that they're not doing anything with.
Ugh, if I could figure out a way to play Mech Commander, oh my god, I would go back.
I haven't looked on good old games for a while for Mech Commander, but yeah, that'd be a cool one to have.
Ugh. But, I mean, Sony has got so many great exclusives. They got the Spider-Mans, I can't think of any right now, I'm tired.
I mean, I think we should take a time out for a second here and just say, fuck Sony. Like, I don't care about this acquisition because I'm worried about Sony. I don't give a shit.
No, I'm not worried about Sony either. I mean, I prefer the PlayStation. That's what I want to play on. I'm just mad my Elder Scrolls isn't on PlayStation now.
True. They do have a couple of big... Well, I mean, I don't even know. It seems like people hated the last of Us game. And they do have God of War still. I think those are Sony exclusives, right?
Yeah. Those are tentpole. They got games. The new Horizon coming. The Horizon Forbidden West. That's going to be really good.
You know, those games alone, that's... not really enough, especially if they keep losing a lot of, you know, a lot of these other just broadly accessible games. Almost all of which are coming to PC anyways, so Microsoft is already, you know, they're solid there.
Yeah, Sony's model for a while now has been like those prestige releases. We're going to have like these big tentpole games and they're going to sell, you know, millions upon millions of copies, and that's going to be our bread and butter. And Microsoft has not had those prestige titles, so they're just trying to buy them, which, you know, when you're looking at games as a form of art is bad. It's kind of a scummy business practice.
That's actually, you know, it sounds like you're about ready to move on, but that actually is a really interesting point. Is it bad for a record label to try to scoop up all of the most successful artists? Like, if a record label is going to do this, they're going to try to distribute their music and get them as much exposure as they can and get them the biggest live audiences that they can. And you would think that, I mean, am I wrong in saying that? Isn't that kind of what Microsoft should be trying to do if they're acquiring all these companies? That their goal should be, we need to have the broadest reach on all of these games as we can, and we need to market them and get them out there so that way we make money.
I think the difference is that Microsoft is also a platform holder. So what they're not trying to like get the broadest reach. They're trying to get the most things into their stable. And it's not really about getting it to the most people as possible. It's getting the most people to them as possible.
Getting as many people as they can to buy the console in the first place to play the game.
Mm-hmm. Or subscribe to Game Pass.
So it's like if everybody has to go to this concert to watch it, but they can't buy a CD or anything, but everybody has to go there for it, then, you know.
Or they can only listen to that record on a Microsoft record player.
Yeah, okay, that's a little better.
So I one of the other questions that has come up in a lot of discussions around this acquisition is also a really gross one to me. It turns into like, okay, well, how is Sony going to respond? Is Sony going to buy E3? Is Microsoft closer to buying Nintendo? Or sorry, not E3. Is Sony going to buy EA? Is Microsoft a step closer to buying Nintendo and all that stuff? And to answer the second one, no, there is no situation or reality where Nintendo gets purchased by Microsoft for a couple of reasons. Nintendo,
well, because they couldn't afford them. There isn't
Microsoft makes a lot of money.
They sure do make a lot of money, but it would be a 50% increase in the size of the company. Like, that's more of a... You're talking a merger. You're not talking a buyout. You're talking about Microsoft / Nintendo at that point. No one's talking about Nintendo... or no one's talking about, like, Microsoft Activision. Like, again, we looked at this already. Nintendo is bigger than PlayStation. Nintendo is bigger than Sony's entire game division. Mm-hmm. So, like... right now, if you're doing the tier ranking, no one should even talk about Nintendo like they're the third party here. Like, they're way ahead of Sony. It's not even like it's neck and neck. They're way ahead of Sony. And then there's Microsoft above both of them. And Microsoft is worth more than both of them combined, but not by much.
And talk about exclusives. Nintendo's got more exclusives than everybody.
Yeah, again, exactly.
When you're talking about Sony, they sort of like put their PlayStation brand. Like, when you talk about the value of companies, the Nintendo gaming division is value. They value it higher than Sony values like the PlayStation sector of Sony. But Sony, as like a consumer electronics company, is bigger than Nintendo, because it just like do like broader things. You like find like Sony like keyboards and Sony headphones. They just have their tentacles.
Sony flamethrower.
Sony lunchboxes.
Yeah. Also, I think you talked about the cultural impact of it all. That like Nintendo is a decidedly Japanese company. Why, of all of the, you know, mashups that they would consider, why would they choose Microsoft?
You know, right? And so there are,
they would be more inclined to link up with Sony and be like, hey, why don't the two of us go against the big boy? You know, like that would be. I don't want that to happen.
What's Sony?
They already tried that. They tried that in the 90s with the Nintendo PlayStation. It was like a CD add-on for the Super Nintendo, and you know that fell apart. Oh, and the rest
funny.
Is history.
That's funny.
But there are legal implications, regulatory implications to a company like Microsoft trying to buy a Japanese company like Nintendo, like Capcom, like Konami, like Square Enix. There are very strong regulations in Japanese law that prevents or makes it extremely difficult from Western companies from buying too much of Japanese companies. Even like the last I was reading about this, even like a 1% stock acquisition of a Japanese company by a foreign company of any kind has to be approved by regulators, let alone a complete takeover. Japan is very ingrained in, like, especially their tech companies being like these sources of national pride, so to speak. Like, these are Japanese companies and they want them to stay Japanese companies. So as far as like a Microsoft acquisition of or of any of these other companies based in Japan, really, really, really far-fetched. I wouldn't go as far as to say it's completely impossible, but it'd be like if we elected a game show host president of this country.
Hmm. Well.
Ah, fuck.
You put it that way.
Anything else we want to touch on with this particular subject? Are we ready to move on here?
We are on for a half hour here, so.
Yeah, more to come on this, I'm sure. I don't think this is the last we're going to hear about this.
I will close out this branch of the conversation by saying that Microsoft has now spent close to $100 billion in acquiring different game developers and publishers, and that has been good enough to keep them in third place. So well done, guys. And I think at some point it would be worth reflecting on their sort of history within the gaming space and how they've been this sort of bumbling buffoon throughout the entirety of it. That's a subject for a different time. Talk about some new releases?
Oh,
sure.
Cool. There is a new release that I've been playing. I finished it out the other day. It is a little action platformer called The Company Man. It is a very brisk game. I finished it in a couple of hours. It is an action platformer set within this, kind of apropos to what we were talking about, this corporate tower where you're working your way up the corporate ladder through different divisions of this company and taking on bosses themed after that division. And this is like a very cynical take on the corporate structure and how corporations are like these dehumanizing entities, and climbing your way up to is kind of like this up through a corporate structure is kind of like this hollow experience. And I think this game trades a lot on its visual style and the sort of cynicism it takes. But as a action platformer, it's, you know, mediocre at best. It doesn't really have any amazing ideas or execution on anything entirely original. It's just basically like you have a melee attack. You got a couple of different ranged attacks that you can cycle through. The platforming itself doesn't amount to anything more than like moving from one platform to a higher or lower platform. Sometimes there are auto-moving platforms that you have to activate and then climb your way up. The action, there are a decent amount of enemy variety where enemies will approach you in different ways or have different attacks that they can come at you with. Most of them are just kind of dispatched in the same way, though. You dodge their big one and then go in for a strike while they're exhausted. There are a couple of boss fights that are a little bit frustrating because there are pitfalls within the fight, and sometimes when you go into a pit, you fall into a pitfall, you take some health damage and it respawns you up on a ledge, and sometimes it respawns you in an unfriendly location, so you just end up getting knocked back into a pitfall again. So that was a bit frustrating, but overall none of the bosses outside of a couple really gave me too much of a hassle. I don't know, the checkpoints I think are unevenly placed throughout this game. It is not uncommon to go a good, 10 minutes without hitting a checkpoint, and then hitting a checkpoint within 2 minutes of your previous one. So I don't think they did a very good job of spacing them out to where it's a little bit friendlier. And these checkpoints, they're only coming to play when you die, so they don't kick you to the beginning of a level, which are very long. It kicks you back to the checkpoint, and you have to go through the whole thing again. Enemies respawn and everything. But yeah, I mean, overall, not a particularly great game. So I'd say go ahead and take a pass on this one.
Hmm.
The other two games, new releases that are not out at time of recording. The big one, Pokemon Legends Arceus, is coming out tomorrow, you guys.
Pokemon made another game? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's been almost 3 months since the last one. We were due.
So there was a
I'm pumped.
There was a poll on the official Pokemon subreddit as to whether or not it is pronounced Arceus or Arceus. And Arceus won with about 70% of the vote. So just to break custom, I'm gonna go with Arceus.
I always said Arceus until the Pokemon Company released a trailer where they started saying Arceus, and then I started hearing everyone else say Arceus, and now Arceus feels more natural.
Yeah,
I prefer Arceus.
Okay,
I'm sticking to it. I'm bringing it back.
I mean, it's here nor there for me. I don't really have a horse in this race. As long as we continue to say Blastoise,
fine by me.
We don't have a horse, but we do have a deer in this race. What's that new Stantler form?
No,
it's an evolved. It's like a second step, isn't it? Or is it like a new one step of Stantler? Is it just a form change?
I think it's an evolution. I don't know. I've been avoiding the spoilers because some idiot got their hands on one and just spoiled the living crap out of the game.
Yeah, stuff's been leaking.
Apparently, there's a new evolution for the first starters. Didn't know that. Can't wait to see what they look like.
Hey, I thought you were avoiding spoilers. And you just go spewing them out.
That's the only spoiler
podcast
I got. That's the only spoiler I got. But I don't know what they look like.
That's the only one I got, except for this one I'm going to hit you with right now.
Well, we're not spoiling anything, but here's the thing. By the time this episode comes out, the game will have already been released, right?
Right, right.
By the way, does it go live at midnight tonight? Because we're recording on the 27th. Does it actually is it accessible at midnight, or do I have to wait till tomorrow at some point to play the game?
That's a good question. Because
is it based on Nintendo servers and stuff like that? Like, what's midnight their time?
No,
or something?
When they do a midnight availability, it's based on your local time zone. However, there have been, I'm not sure about this game, there have been times where there are new release games, but they don't unlock until sometimes noon the day of. So I don't know if this one's going to be a midnight one.
Did you guys?
I'm just going to run out and pick it up tomorrow morning real quick.
Okay, so you guys are getting physical copies?
Yeah, I'm getting a physical copy. My Target got 100 of them, so I'm I'm not really going to sweat it.
Part of me just doesn't want to deal with the whole juggling cartridges anymore. It's just so much easier just to buy the game, just download it.
Yeah, it's true. And, for me, a lot of times it's a vanity thing. I like having the things on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
There have been times where I bring a game to work, and I'll bring, a couple games with me, and, I'll have to, go into my backpack, take out the card, put the other one in, and, it is extra stuff you got to carry around, you got to have a home for.
Yeah, for me, it's my PlayStation's hit its max capacity, and so whenever I want to play a new game, I got to delete games, and I'm going back and forth on this whole thing, and it's a pain in the butt.
Isn't it funny, though? We'll get to it one day, but when, the Wii was released, one of the big complaints was, there wasn't much storage space, and you always had to delete games so you could, install new ones or reinstall ones that you had before, and there's this constant process. They referred to it as cleaning out the fridge. And everyone complained about it. Everybody hated it. and now everybody just has to do it for every console.
Yeah. I mean, I could just get a bigger memory card for my Switch, but at the same time, that's going to fill up eventually, and I'm going to be doing the same stupid problem.
I mean, I think I got a 256 that still has quite a bit of space on it.
I only put 32 in there, and I filled that. So I got a 32 console, 32, yeah, I'm all filled up.
Anyway, did you guys watch any of the non-spoiler videos that came out over the past week or so? The Nintendo, or
I am not.
Pokemon Company released a 13-minute overview of catching and battling and stuff like that.
No,
I mean, I kind of just been avoiding all of it just because I don't want to have it be spoiled or to get it crisp, mixed up with other stuff, you know. I mean, and again, we'll get to play it in 24 hours. It'll be here.
And we'll be talking about it on the next show. Mm-hmm. It is funny, though, because I did watch this video, and I won't talk about anything specific that they put in the video, but some of the reactions after it was released were people, me and Russ were talking about this before the show, people were saying, oh, all you do is walk around and go through these open spaces and catch Pokemon and battle Pokemon and craft stuff for catching and battling Pokemon, and that's all you do? Yeah, that sounds like a game. What are you talking about?
Yep, it's kind of the point.
That's
of the
all you do. Yeah, please don't do more. That sounds like enough.
You mean in Zelda Breath of the Wild, all you did was run around and kill stuff and collect materials to craft stuff and get more swords, and then those swords broke and you had to get more? Yes, that's the game.
Mm-hmm.
But you could surf on your shield.
And you could surf on your shield.
And this happens a lot where people see a game and, you know, you're seeing a very brief trailer or vertical slice of what the game is, and they're like, oh, that's all you do? And then eventually the game comes out and it ends up being more fleshed out than they can show you in a fucking 2-minute trailer, because of course it is. There seems to be this desire to know everything all at once, but then also not have any spoilers. You can't have both.
Yeah.
What starters you guys trying to start with?
Rowlet. Yeah, Rowlet for sure.
It is. So you're on Rowlet. John's definitely going Cyndaquil.
You can go Cyndaquil. I might stick with my Gen 5 buddy and go Oshawott. But not that we have to have different starters. We always do this.
We always do. The two of you end up ditching it anyway. So I mean, I may actually go Oshawott because I never actually used one.
I like Oshawott.
I also want to know when is it going to be able to trade with home? If it's able to trade immediately, I'll probably just import the other two starters anyways.
Yeah.
Because it seems like the first forms are just the first forms. I would assume that once they're in the game, it's when they evolve into their second or third form that they take on the Hisuian versions or whatever. Whatever. I don't think we have to do the whole each one of us gets a starter, but I am for sure calling Rowlet if you guys are thinking we're doing that.
If you input a Cubone into Sword and Shield, is it going to be the Alolan Marowak, or is it going to be the regular Marowak?
That's a good question. So if you take a, it depends on where it was caught. If you catch, because
exactly
when you put a Pokemon into home, it will keep its the region where it was caught. So if you catch a Cubone in Alola and you import it to another game, pretty sure it will be an Alolan Marowak.
This should be the same thing with these starters. If you input a Cyndaquil, it's just going to be a regular Typhlosion.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That's interesting, because if it doesn't have incorporation with them, you know what? I'm going to stop myself right there, because you actually could do that in Sword and Shield. You could actually get different regional variants. So you could get both a Persian and a Berserker.
Or what you could do is just create the game, put them in home, create another one, put the other one in home, create a third game, and then just import the other two and you're good to go.
You could also just do that. Yeah.
It's the modern solution of what we had to do with the trade cable. We had to start a new game, trade it to a friend, start another new game, trade it to a friend.
I think we waited for so long for this that the first thing that we need to do shouldn't be trying to get all three starters at the same time. We should probably just enjoy the game.
Yeah. I think maybe that's why they don't have incorporation with home right away, as far as we know. I am interested to see when they do finally get both Diamond Pearl and this incorporated with home.
Yeah, they still haven't done it with the Diamond and Pearl yet, too, either. That's kind of...
Nope. And it's been almost 3 months. Come on, guys.
Yeah, seriously. And in Pokemon Go... Well, this isn't the Pokemon show. But in Pokemon Go, like, they've been doing this thing where they keep giving us all of these 4th-gen shinies. So I really want to play with them in Pokemon Diamond and Pearl, but I can't yet because I can't import them. So, first world problems.
Outrage.
Yep.
So, there is one other game coming out tomorrow that I'm most likely going to be giving a shot at some point. It's a game called Luminous Avenger 2. This is a game from Inti Creates. They are a smaller game developer, but they make...
It looks pretty good.
Yeah. They made a couple of these Luminous Avenger games now. They also do the Azure Striker Gunvolt series. They do the Blaster Master Zero games, which I really like. So they do like, and they worked on like the Mega Man Zero games. I think they did the port of the Mega Man Zero collection and ZX collection that came out last year or the year before. But I really like the sort of action side scrollers that they do, so I'm looking forward to this one. And, you know, it's like a smaller game. It's like $20-25, so not expecting the world out of it, but they usually do solid work.
He's got a gun with the buzzsaw at the end of it. Come on, what more do you want?
Right, that's all you need.
Yeah.
So in addition to video games, there are also some new release movies that I thought would be fun to talk about.
Oh, I thought there were.
Ryan, we went and saw a movie yesterday. Why don't you take us away?
Yeah, we sure did. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we went to see the feature we've talked about a couple of times, I guess, over the past, month or two, but an anime film called Belle. That B-E-L-L-E. It's not a musical, but there are a number of... It's sort of built in and around music. It follows the story of a kind of an anonymous, unknown teenage girl dealing with grief, who sort of lives out in the sticks of Japan, joining a social media platform and becoming famous as kind of a pop star. And you're kind of just... It's very slice of life. It's not your typical kind of action-oriented anime. I personally love it. I think it's got a lot of heart. The musical numbers are great. Like, all the songs in it are fantastic. The animation is unbelievably good. And just all in all, an interesting story and kind of a nice, you know, a very of its time, very modern movie dealing with how we consume social media. So, yeah. John, what'd you think?
I thought it was also really good. I had a really good time with it. Visually arresting. Really, really good. The movie takes place like within two spaces. One, you know, is reality, or she's this 17-year-old high school student and her going through life and dealing with the trauma of losing her mother at a very young age. And then the other half of it is in this virtual space they call the U, where, you know, people are given like these sort of virtual reality avatars, and through the magic of these earplugs you're able to like experience everything as if you were there. I think that's a similar setup to like a Ready Player One, if anyone knows or remembers. Yeah. Or has any affection for that particular franchise.
Yeah, it's supposed to be kind of like a metaverse or like a shared augmented reality that everyone can right. jump into. Or like the Matrix. You could be like the Matrix if you want.
Right, and you know, similar to the Matrix, when you sort of generate your avatar in this space, it's kind of like this manifestation of like your personality or how you view yourself, or an interpretation of you rather than a one-for-one duplication of yourself in a digital space. So all the stuff like both in reality and in that metaverse are both visually very good. And like reality, I think it's so very good for like its down to earth sort of tone and color palette and visuals. And the U is, of course, the opposite, where everything is very whimsical and bombastic. The character designs, like the different animated models they have, are very reminiscent, I thought, of like Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. Or some of those older anime where it's very what's the word, busy, where the designs are very ornate. A character that's a raccoon. It would be a raccoon with a saxophone and a snake around its neck and wearing a pair of cargo shorts.
Oh, yeah. Just every frame is just so busy. There's just so much happening. You know, kind of like when you jump into a lot of these, you know, games where everyone gets to make their own avatar of a character and they're equipping all kinds of just random shit to themselves. You can kind of see that that's what's supposed to happen with people that use this platform. On top of it just being those kind of, you know, 80s infinity grids where it just seems like there's endless space that goes on forever with these just giant objects just showing enormous scale. And again, when you hop back and forth between that and this very just bucolic kind of like natural looking slice of life countryside Japan, they kind of that contrast again, like you're saying, just this absurd gauche stuff with the kind of just mundane rural living, you know, really kind of it makes both seem that much more visually appealing as you watch it.
Mm-hmm. I think also the music, the soundtrack is also excellent. We saw the subtitled version. There is also an English dub version. We saw the subtitle version. The songs were all really great. I don't think there was a second singer throughout the movie. It was all just the one lead character who was doing like the lead vocals and all the songs. Really great voice, really impressive range.
Yeah, even the part where she's like, there, not to spoil anything, but there comes a part where she kind of has to sing as herself and not as the avatar character. It's pretty I believe it's the same woman singing anyways. It's just sort of like this minor filter that's put over her voice when she's singing inside the you.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure you're right. I'm pretty sure it's the same person because in the credits it was crediting one person as both characters. So,
yeah.
And you know, I didn't think they were the voices were wildly different. I don't know how like how much of a filter was put over her voice when she's like in her avatar mode, but it was definitely like a more confident like definitely projected more when she was singing in that mode. Whereas, you know, when she's singing as herself, it's much more reserved, much more like there's a shyness to the way she's singing until she sort of builds up to that, that confidence level.
Yeah. I mean, that's how the movie starts, is with a musical number. And it's her like on the back of a humpback whale that's made it. And like on the back of the whale itself is just stacks of speakers, you know, as she's sort of flying through this kind of open world like digital environment. So yeah, it's a feast. It's visually, it's just aesthetically pleasing film.
Yeah, I think where the movie left a little bit to be desired was in the narrative. I think that there were certain plot threads that just kind of tail off and don't really go anywhere. Well, when the movie starts, I think it was trying to be, or like it was leading you to believe, it was some sort of a commentary on living your life in this sort of digital space and how you need to have like balance with actual reality and you shouldn't be living most of your life over here. But then that kind of goes away and turns into this, and again, trying to avoid spoilers, kind of this derivative take on a Beauty and the Beast storyline, which then of course turns into something else. I don't know. I think a lot of like the plot lines kind of meander and you're wondering what they build towards. There are characters that show up at the beginning and then just kind of go away. And then they show up at the end like, oh, okay, it's her again. There's like a rivalry that sort of gets hinted at right at the beginning and that character disappears and then shows up at the end and like has this moment where like, oh, I'm supposed to like give a shit what you think about what's happening going on here. Like you haven't been on frame for an hour and a half. Why are you here?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is predictable. I mean, in a lot of it, you can kind of guess the beats that are about to happen. And you can kind of project some of these character arcs, you know, kind of see where they're going.
Yeah, it's a little bit nitpicky to go after that one character in particular. I don't think that this movie fulfills the promise of like this complex narrative. I don't think it has to. I think this movie stands strongly enough on its visual presentation and its soundtrack that those things alone make it a really good movie and good enough to for anybody to enjoy. I think that a really strong narrative would have like really put this movie over the top as something like incredibly special. As it is right now, it's just a really special movie, which I don't mean in a pejorative way. But I don't think that this movie needed like a super strong narrative to tie it all together. I think that the one it presents is fine.
Yeah, and I think it kind of has a satisfying end to it as well. It's not like there's these grand stakes or anything. I mean, there is like for the characters involved, some very huge things happen, but it's not about like this woman trying to become a pop star or anything like that. It's, you know, it's just sort of like an event that occurs throughout the story.
And maybe that was like sort of an issue, like the issue of expectations. You're expecting like there are these things on a grand scale. Like the visuals are on this grand scale. The music and the soundtrack are all this very grand scale. The narrative doesn't match that sort of, or doesn't fulfill the grand scale with all the plot lines that it sets up. And again, I don't think it has to. I think that, you know, it is okay to tell a smaller story. I don't mean to say that, you know, the narrative of the movie sort of ruins what it is. It doesn't.
So yeah, I mean, just kind of closing thoughts on it. You know, I think it's a really good movie. I think it's worth checking out. You know, obviously, if you're a fan of anime, then this one's probably on your radar. You've probably already seen some stuff about it. If you're just looking for something that's outside of the Disney wheelhouse, like if you're typically the animated films you end up seeing end up being from a DreamWorks or a Disney, this is a nice palate cleanser, a total change of pace, one that's made, you know, not so campy and silly. Like the characters just feel like real people.
Yeah, so, big thumbs up for me as well.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah. Totally agree. And when we were at the movie, they showed that there's a preview for a DreamWorks movie, that animated one. I think it was called The Bad Guys or something. And the whole movie, like, if my eyes rolled any harder, I would have swallowed them. Like, yeah. It looks like such trash.
I know, but you know what?
It's a kid book. I mean, it's a very popular kid book. The only reason why I know about it is because I work electronics and we take care of kids' books.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
But there, it's a big series. Yeah, we do books.
Okay.
As well, because we put them with the movies and stuff, so we take care of kids' books. But it's like a whole series. Then Dog Man, and I'm surprised there isn't like a Dog Man movie coming out.
I think it's pronounced Dogman.
I feel that Dogman. But you know that Captain Underpants, Bad Guys. There's a whole thing going on with them.
It's a good point. Like I shouldn't judge too harshly. It is a children's movie for children.
Yeah.
So I did watch another movie over the past week. It was The Last Duel, directed by Ridley Scott.
Oh, you actually got around to
it. I almost watched that the other day.
Yeah, it's available on HBO Max, so I streamed it. I won't talk too long about it. I think that it was all right. It was this sort of... have either of you guys seen it? Wes, you said you were thinking about seeing it, so you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I almost watched it.
I have not seen it yet, though. No.
It's, did you know anything about, like, the plot setup or anything?
Apparently, like, the two guys are good friends or whatever, and then his wife accuses the friend of things.
So it's a movie told in three parts, and it's a lot like, the Japanese film In a Garden Grove, or in an Orange Grove, I think it is. Where it is a story about, you know, the events that led up to this assault. And it is told from three different perspectives. From the perspective of the Matt Damon character, from the perspective of the Adam Driver character, and from the perspective of the female lead. And I'm so sorry, I can't remember her name.
Jodie.
You sexist.
I know, right? Was that Ryan?
Jodie Comer. If it's probably her, she's the third build.
Hmm. So it tells the story three times. You know, there are different events. It's not like it tells like the same exact events. But Matt Damon and Adam Driver, these two characters, are sort of like these comrades in arms. Their lives go separate ways, and then it kind of picks up from their lives going separate ways and tells the story in three parts from the perspective of these three different characters. I think that it was fine. I don't think that Ridley Scott has made a masterpiece here. It is interesting, though. I think the one thing that I do want to say about this movie is it is interesting when Ridley Scott makes these historical pictures. He puts like these modern issues in them. We talked about something like Gladiator over the past year. There's a Ridley Scott movie where it's a story about using blood sport to restore a fake democracy. Kind of opposing ideas there. This one is addressing an important issue of taking a woman's allegation of sexual misconduct seriously, which is something that we should all do, but then it's putting it in this context of a historical film where women are treated as property. I think it's an important issue to bring up. I don't know if it was the right setting in which to do it. And it's all building up again toward this blood sport where Adam Driver and Matt Damon are going to have this last duel.
That's the name of the movie.
It is the name of the movie. And they challenge each other to a duel. They drop the glove on the ground and everything.
Oh, well. Well, you said that they tell the same opening part like three different times. Like, have you guys ever seen Rashomon?
Maybe that's the movie I'm thinking of.
Rashomon is the one that very, very similarly is about a man and his wife traveling through the woods who are set upon by a bandit. And then you hear what happened from all three of them. And it just sort of calls into question what even really happened. Because you get each one's perspective. You don't get the truth. You just sort of get what each one of them wanted to believe happened. Like, when you're seeing all of this past content from it, like, is it just, you know, like, this is the matter of fact events that occurred?
Right. So I'm looking it up right now, and Rashomon, from my really quick Google search here, it looks like it was based on a short story called In a Grove. So maybe that's why I was getting the names confused. But yeah, it is, it's similar to that in its setup and in its construction, but it is not telling like the same events. It's getting more into how their lives have diverged. So you're not seeing very many of the same scenes when it goes to the three parts. You're seeing maybe a couple of the same scenes from different perspectives, but it's doing more to sort of set up the characters and maybe give you a perspective of why they're acting differently from another person's perspective. But yeah, there is one more movie that will be out by the time this post. I'm interested in seeing it. You guys interested in seeing Morbius? That's coming out.
Yeah, this is going to be good. Well, yeah. I don't know if it'll be good, but you know.
I'm interested to check it out. And it could just be the fact that, you know, again, I've got that movie pass, so I can kind of see whichever ones I want. yeah, this one seems like it could be a fun one. Yeah, I'd much rather see this than the ambulance one that he has coming out, the Jake Gyllenhaal.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't that one just called Ambulance?
It is, in fact. But the L.A. Great. Is different
that's,
letters.
That's very indicate clever of them.
That it's taking place in, I don't know, some city.
San Jose.
Yeah. And that one's made by, oh, God, what's his face? I can't even think of his name. Michael Bay. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So at some point, Ambulance is blowing up.
Oh, you would hope.
If there is a dumb movie from a hack director that we're going to see anytime soon, it's going to be Moonfall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you kind of just got to appreciate the grandeur of something so stupid. Something just so unbelievably colorfully stupid.
It's a prime target for like a riff tracks at some point.
Yeah. You know, I didn't think about it, but here's the thing, right? So Jared Leto is playing Morbius, and he was in Fight Club, and Edward Norton was the Hulk, right? So, you know, Multiverse.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brad Pitt, also in Fight Club, he was in Deadpool 2. He was Vanisher.
Oh, it's all coming around. Yep. It's all coming back.
And Meatloaf is dead. It's very sad.
I know. I wasn't going to say anything about it, but yeah, he is. He's definitely dead.
Yep. So, on that sad note, are you guys watching any of Peacemaker? Speaking of dumb superhero shit.
I haven't yet. Is it good?
It is good. It's good. Oh. It's James Gunn is sort of like the showrunner, the creative force behind it. And James Gunn, you might recognize him from something like Guardians of the Galaxy. Also, we've talked about multiple times about his sort of origin into superhero movies. It was the movie called Super, starring Rainn Wilson. And it was this very dark, mean, visceral look at the type of person who would choose to put on a suit and beat people up for cutting in line. There is a lot of the movie Super in Peacemaker, so I think like if you're watching Peacemaker and enjoying it, but want fewer jokes, then maybe go for Super, because that is a really interesting movie. Peacemaker itself, it's an interesting, like much smaller scale look at like these superhero squads or sort of like black ops operations. Sort of like the absurdity of all of it. It's interesting that they're taking like a character like Peacemaker, who was a heel in his debut movie, and kind of trying to turn him into a more sympathetic, narcissistic character rather than just some asshole. But yeah, it's violent. It's quite violent. It's quirky and it's weird. So, you know, if you like modern superhero movies like Guardians of the Galaxy, then
Doom Patrol.
Sure. Doom Patrol, I think, has a much more dour tone.
But still, Doom Patrol is so much fun.
Doom Patrol is real good.
Yeah.
But yeah, Peacemaker. And it's got like a weird opening dance scene to the theme song.
Really?
All the characters in the show dance. To a really catchy song. I forget the name of the song. Anyway.
Is there a big, dumb, talking animal?
No, but there is an eagle.
Well, you know.
Yeah, Peacemaker apparently has a sidekick. It's an eagle, and it's named Eagly. They address it.
All right, well, yeah.
But yeah, I give that one a thumbs up, too. That one's well worth a watch. Sadly, it is not all available at once. They're doing the thing where they release an episode a week.
Yeah.
So yeah, how archaic. One last new release that I wanted to mention was Hellfire Gala. It is an X-Men comic. It came out as a big collection of a bunch of different ongoing X-Men comics. Hellfire Gala is this big party. It's a big party that they throw to sort of flex their mutant muscles because they have their own nation now. Because they have their own nation, they're throwing this big diplomatic party where all these people come in. The X-Men scene is weird. It's weird right now. I don't think it's poorly written. I think it's all very interesting, but I think they do things that are not in character. For example, Wes, you have my copy of yes. X of Swords. Have you read any of it yet?
Bits and pieces, not much.
All right, so end result of that. Way back in Marvel history, this is a big retcon. This is not something they addressed way back when, but way back when in Marvel history, there were other mutants who were kind of contemporary with Apocalypse. They got sent into Otherworld, which is it has to do with the Marvel multiverse. They were no longer on Earth or able to get to Earth. Ten of Swords has to do with like bringing them all back together and getting these sort of marooned mutants back onto Earth proper. So that's where Ten of Swords ends, with all these new mutants coming on. Hellfire Gala is this way of sort of dealing with that plot line. And they do it by terraforming. There's this big moment where mutants use their magic mutant powers to basically terraform Mars. And that's where all these new mutants are going to live that they brought in. And now Mars is a mutant planet.
Hang on. I'm skimming what this is about.
That's
weird. Murder mystery? This reads like this is a murder mystery.
There is a murder mystery that gets set up, but it is not resolved until another limited series called The Trial of Magneto. So I'm guessing Magneto gets put on trial for some sort of murder.
Oh, man, I'm just reading this, and it reads like the episodes of Who Shot Mr. Burns.
All the murders he has.
Yeah, this is the one. This is the one that we need to get to the bottom of this one.
Well, he murders someone who's kind of a big deal.
Hmm.
If he did, in fact, murder this person.
Well, I think he'll get absolved of that. I don't think that they would... Because one of the things that's a big deal in the new X-Men comics is, like, if you kill a human, you get exiled, and not, like, exiled off the mutant nation. You get put into basically a bottomless pit of exile, and they did that to Sabretooth right at the beginning of the new run of X-Men comics because they needed to bench him for a while. So Sabretooth has been out of the picture because he's been exiled into, this limbo space. Hellfire Gala, with all these X-Men comics, it's interesting. It's an interesting read. It's well written. They set up some events that, you know, I'm sure they'll pay off, and it'll be fun to see them paying off. When you're writing an X-Men comic, there's baggage that comes along with it. You have to keep in mind that these characters, when they're originally written, were an allegory for the sort of angst that goes hand in hand with entering adolescence, having like these feelings like you're separate, you don't belong, things that are happening to you are different from things that are happening to other people. You're weird, you're a freak for the things that are happening to you. And because of that allegory that set up when they originally came out, it kind of morphed into an allegory for civil rights movements in the 60s, and then even into civil rights movements for gay rights. When you're writing an X-Men comic, that baggage comes along with it. X-Men has become an allegory for these movements for civil rights. And when you take those characters and then turn them into this sort of separatist nation that doesn't want to be part of the main goings-on of humanity at that point, you're turning an allegory for civil rights into a separatist movement, and the things don't go together well. So I think all this stuff is well written. I don't think it's the right way to treat the characters. You guys up for a break? You want to take a break?
Let's take a break.
Yeah,
let's take a break. Mm-hmm. And then come back with some stuff that's happening in February. Jump into the fire, keep up the goat with your fears, stand proud and tall, we will never grow tired. Line up the parties right here, come on, come all, let's follow the North Star. Step in and walk, whatever you wanna be, you are free to slack all of us off. Hand the way across, you never look at the stars. So ride to the future, are you ready to depart? La 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 la, when our heartbeats collide, no mind in a place we've never been before. I'm reaching out for the moon.
Come, it's time to live as another you. Come, it's time to start another life. Come, it's time to change the world. We didn't waste our time here, it's now or
never. Okay, there's a bunch of stuff happening in February. I think we're going to blast through this. I don't think it's going to take as much time at all. For games coming to Nintendo Switch, there are a few. One's called Magnum Lord. This one's coming out on the 4th. This one I put on the list because it's an RPG and it's got a nice anime art style to it. It does lean heavily onto some visual novel elements. So definitely going to be a pass for me. Also, I got a little bit of sticker shock. Yeah. I was looking at the price earlier. It was like $40.
Ooh. That seems pretty pricey.
It doesn't really... I watched the video. It doesn't look that great, really. I mean, there's some kind of like... relationship building stuff as well to it. You're like,
It does. It has. I think it has a nice visual style when you're in like the visual novel sort of elements of it. But when you're getting to like the action RPG gameplay, it turns more into like a chibi, not quite sprite art, but close. I know what you mean. Like when it gets to the chibi stuff, I don't think it looks as good as the more visual novel stuff either.
Yeah.
Any guys interested in Ollie Ollie World? That skateboarding
game? I didn't look at it. I don't know that one.
Yeah, it looks like it's kind of an on-rails skateboarding kind of game where you do tricks and stuff. And I don't know, it's like kind of a colorful environment. It doesn't look that cool to me, though, but, you know.
I'm not all that interested either. I played the first one. This is a sequel. The first one, it was part of like a Humble Bundle for 3DS or something, so I picked it up real cheap. And it is, the first one was a very on-rails, like you're just kind of like going downhill skating, and you are scored based on the tricks you're doing, like your grinds and your kickflips and all that. It's kind of like a high score game. There are a few different tracks that you go on, but you're just kind of getting your best runs and posting them to the internet. This one, it does have a very different visual style. It's much more like colorful and bombastic. But
I mean, it looks like Adventure Time almost.
Mm. That's what I was going to say. It looks a little bit like that. I didn't really watch a lot of that show, but it does definitely stick out as having that kind of art style.
Mm. Almost as if they intended it that way.
Mm.
So there's one coming out on the 10th called Ocean's Heart that I'm pretty interested in. It looks like a top-down Zelda. And it's supposed to be like real compact, like 10 or 12 hours. So I'm interested in like a brisker Zelda experience like that, especially with so many longer RPGs coming out, like Legends Arceus.
Mm-hmm.
Also pretty evocative of Wind Waker, because you have to do like a lot of sailing to different islands, or so I hear. So that one is on my radar for sure. There's another one called Eglia Rebirth. This one was on my radar because it was from some developers of the Secret of Mana games back on the Super Nintendo. This one is a port of a mobile game, so I don't have high expectations. I kind of stuck it on a wish list and seeing if it goes on deep discount at some point. I do like the sort of chibi visual style for this game rather than for Maglum Lord. And it's like a town-building game. And I do like to build towns. So there's that.
John, you should run for mayor.
Mayor! I'm going to run for mayor. Hey, Wes, you going to get the Kingdom Hearts Cloud version?
No.
Wes, for the low price of $90, you can play all the Kingdom Hearts games through the cloud on your Nintendo Switch.
And you need constant internet connection.
Of course you do. It's a cloud game.
And I already own all of them, and it's been a year since I played any of them.
Oh, that's confusing. I thought it was about the character cloud.
He is in the games, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He is. He's not a playable character, but he's there.
Outrage.
So is Yuffie and Aeris and Cid and who's the one from 8, the main character from 8?
Squall.
Squall's there.
Gross.
Yeah. They're just there.
Nah, this is
for like no reason.
Kind of a sad trombone of a debut for the Kingdom Hearts. Some people like those games. Wes, do you like those games or just kind of buy them?
I mean, I like them. Okay. I tried replaying Kingdom Hearts 1 a while ago and it did not age well.
Hmm.
So, I mean, but I still have fond memories of Kingdom Hearts 2 especially. I really liked Kingdom Hearts 2. They're fun games. It's just you got to get through the let's go for friendship kind of crap that they throw at you, because you know you're playing through Disney franchises and things like that. And I didn't play Kingdom Hearts 3, but there's like a Frozen level. I'm like, I don't really want to play through Frozen. Like,
do you own it?
I do. I mean, I buy for $5 on like some massive discount thing. Yeah. Like, I wasn't gonna bit $60 for this game brand new. Like, that wasn't happening. But I buy it when it got some kind of like dirt cheap clearance price that popped up for it, so I grabbed it, but I haven't played it yet. But I mean, the combat's fun. There's a lot. It's a hack and slash. It's fun. It's not doing anything crazy, but you know.
Yeah, you know, I've only ever played like maybe a half hour of the first one, and from everything I've ever seen about Kingdom Hearts, at least like the mainline games, it's an action game that sort of people lump in with RPGs because it has Final Fantasy characters in it. But I don't, like, if the combat
there's
is
no
all
stats. I mean, the only stats that changes is, like, some accessories or your weapon. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. There's no stat building. There's no real character development. You get magic slowly as you level up and everything like that. But, I mean,
that's like saying a first-person shooter is an RPG because you can also use grenades.
Yeah.
Cool. But anyway, the last game that I wanted to mention as coming out in February is there's an Assassin's Creed Ezio collection, which is, of course, available on other systems for dirt cheap, but you can play it on your Switch if you really want to. And Wes, like the Ezio games, you've talked about those in the past. Those are the ones you like?
Those are good. Those are the good ones. Okay. Yeah, that's the Ezio ones would be Assassin's Creed 2, which is great. Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, which is great. And then I don't know if, was it Revelations? Something like that. I forget. Is it all three of the Ezio games?
Yes.
Okay. I forget what the third one was called, but the third one was made by like a different company. It wasn't the mainline ones. And you'd tell there were some pretty big difference. There's some differences and everything. It didn't feel like the other ones, but it still was a good game and it closed up his story. But yeah, the Ezio series were the best of the Assassin's Creed franchises, in my opinion. They were great. Yeah.
Cool. So, in addition to those games, I mean, nothing like super standout, I think, for the month of February. But we're all going to still be playing Arceus. Because that's out at the tail end of January. So most of February, that's probably going to be the game du jour.
Safe to say.
So, there are some other things coming up, some shows and movies that I think are going to be pretty fun. Raised by Wolves Season 2 is out. Did you guys watch the trailer that I sent over for that?
Mm-mm. I didn't. I have honestly never heard of the show.
So, if you had watched it, it's probably better that you didn't, because it would probably look like an acid trip. Like, this show went absolutely fucking off the wall. So, general setup is, and I think I've mentioned this before.
In a good way or a bad way?
Oh, in a good way. Like, the show is pretty good. The general setup is, it's like alternate history of Earth. There's this holy war on Earth between, like, this faction of people who are, like, vaguely crusader Christians, and then people who are atheists. They have, like, this world-ending war. Both groups end up building, like, these space arcs in order to escape the planet, because the planet is fucked. And the atheist faction sends a couple of androids with a group of children to a different planet to start up a new civilization that will not have any sort of faith-based structure of anything. And
oh, okay, this is sounding familiar. I think you talked about this not that long ago.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has. He's mentioned it a couple times.
And it just so happens that the faction of Crusaders also sent an Ark ship to the same place, and but to complicate matters further, there were a couple of the people from the atheist faction who sort of hijacked their way onto the ship and are masquerading as if they are part of these Crusaders. And the sort of clashes that happen as both groups sort of struggle for survival and then eventually bump into each other. And then season one ends in this really, like, in a literal sense, blaze of glory fashion that then sets up this sort of flying snake monster creature that is going to terrorize both groups as it continues into season two. This is, I don't know if they were all directed by Ridley Scott, but this is Ridley Scott going back into like these weird, vaguely horror sci-fi projects, which I think is where he excels. You look at someone like Gladiator, American Gangster, Last Duel, like these movies, they're fine, but Ridley Scott is at his best when he's got like this really like retro-futuristic sci-fi material to work with. I recommend it. I think it's pretty good.
Nice. Yeah, I'll check this out.
We mentioned Moonfall. You guys in? I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
I know nothing.
You gotta see this one.
Oh, Ryan, give them the elevator pitch for Moonfall.
Oh, yeah.
Sell me on Moonfall. Let's go.
So the moon is hollow, and there's apparently an alien in there that wants to destroy the Earth by crashing the moon into the Earth.
Oh.
Yeah, you're kind of
going to do it all along.
Yes.
Couldn't crash the hollow bits.
Yeah, it's it seems like this is going to be your typical Roland Emmerich kind of movie. You know, like Independence Day, Day After Tomorrow, just a lot of bombastic sets of everything just exploding.
Did he do 2012?
I think he did. I would not be surprised if he did. Yeah. But yeah, like, that's kind of what you can expect, is just big, dumb action. Like, I don't know if you remember in Independence Day, the reason why they were able to take down the alien ship was with an iMac. So expect that level of intelligence when you watch this movie. You know, there's literally a scene where, like, the Earth seems to be, like, destroying or something, and, like, gravity is no longer having an effect, but they're still doing a chase scene in a car. Like, it's driving off on the shards of shattered Earth. So, yeah, it looks just like you'll lose a couple IQ points from watching it. So, you know.
I'm down. Take them away.
Yeah, I'm willing to see this one. I want to see what this is about.
Do you think they take that into consideration with the ticket prices? Like, you're going to lose some brain cells, so we're going to...
Yeah.
Like, no, but
like, this movie's going to cost $13 and some brain cells.
No, I bet, like, the price stays the same, and they even, like, up the price of concessions, because now you're not smart enough to realize that you can do what Ryan does and sneak a Sprite in his hood.
Do you think it goes?
That was my.
You lose them instantly from buying the ticket.
That was a ginger ale, mind you. It was not a Sprite. Okay. It was not a lemon lime soda. It was a ginger ale. And yes, I did have a Ziploc bag filled with Sour Patch Kids. You couldn't eat all my Sour Patch Kids all at once. So
the person in the movie theater didn't realize the ginger ale in your hood.
Oh, they didn't give a fuck. Like,
oh, they don't care.
We walked into the theater, and the guy who was, like, going to be scanning tickets was, like, walking in the other direction. We could have legitimately just walked right by him. He would not have given a fuck. The third member of the group, James, he had not arrived yet, and it was getting close to showtime, so we were just going to go sit down and let James in when he got there. And Ryan was explaining to the usher what was happening, and the guy was like, oh, don't even worry about it. He can come in. Like, you don't even know what he looks like. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's pretty lackadaisical. But that said, I've noticed that they are sticklers for getting head counts. They send people in to make sure that nobody's, like, crashing the theater. And even then, I don't know what they do about that. Like, I don't know if they have it, like, a chart set out that says, like, oh, you're supposed to have people in these seats, but not these seats or whatever. But
hey,
they don't really care.
Don't do it again. Enjoy the movie.
Yeah, like, what are they going to say? It's like, oh, nice, you're done with your ginger ale already. Okay.
Okay, call the cops on me.
We'll let this slide, but you got to go buy some concessions.
I mean, here's the thing. Normally I do. Like, normally, like, I don't, I'll buy popcorn, but still bring a drink, you know? Mm. And by the way, if you go on Tuesdays, they do half price popcorn, so just keep that in mind.
I'll buy popcorn, but only on half price. Right.
Well, because it's like $9. Like, you know, it's a nickel's worth of actual popcorn that goes into their jumbo tubs. They probably spend more on the actual paper than they do on like the butter and shit. So it's like the fact that they charge $9, like, they know that this is not an equitable market price for what they're selling you. You know?
No, that's where they make their money.
Right, yeah, totally. And yeah, like, and I think we've talked about this a little bit, but yeah, since I got that movie pass, it's like, since it's done strictly by Regal, it's not like the whole movie pass thing that happened, what was that, now 4 years ago? 3 or 4 years ago when that was going down? It was a shame that that whole thing imploded, but, you know, it really wasn't to do with the company itself. It seems it had more to do with the theaters, who wanted to do their own model themselves, and it looks like they finally decided to roll it out. So, well worth it. Like, it costs $40 for 3 months, and I'm a month into it, and I've seen 5 movies. So, well worth it. Well worth it. Yeah.
So there's another movie. I didn't have it in my notes, but it got a release date on HBO Max. It's the new Soderbergh movie, and it's exclusive to HBO Max. It's called Kimmy. And, you know, if I just watched the trailer, I probably wouldn't be all that interested in this movie, but it has Soderbergh directing, so it's probably going to be at least an interesting movie. It's sort of this take on a fear of technology. There is she seems like an investigative journalist or someone who, like, monitors people for, like, some sort of a clandestine organization, possibly the government. And she has basically an Alexa, except they call it Kimmy. And it seems like there's a murder mystery unfolding, and this Kimmy artificial intelligence seems to be a sinister presence. I don't think the trailer does a good job of setting it up. And again, if Soderbergh wasn't attached to the director, I probably would have been like, I don't know. Maybe I'll watch it, but I'm not all that interested. But Soderbergh is an interesting director because he seems to sort of defy any sort of genre. I guess like maybe you could put a lot of his movies into like a thriller category, but that doesn't really mean much of anything. That seems to be a category where they put movies where they're not really sure how to categorize these things. A lot of his movies just sort of like defy standard categorization. I kind of like ends up being this chameleon of a director.
Yeah, he's all over the place. It's true. I see this thing has a 150-minute runtime. This is pretty long. This is going to be a pretty long movie. And for what is only 4 named cast? Have I got this right? You're not going to be watching 2.5 hours of 4 people. There's got to be more people involved in this.
My goodness, yeah, that would be quite a feat if he was able to pull that off.
Yeah.
Going back to Bell really quick, what was the runtime on Bell? Is that like a 2-hour movie?
Yeah, probably thereabouts. I'm not sure exactly how long it was. I might figure that out pretty quick.
Well, we had a 9:30 runtime, and we were getting out of there like at midnight. So yeah, like 30 minutes of trailers.
So the way that Regal, I have all of this Regal information now. I hope you're happy. But basically, from when
are they sponsoring you like Amazon with John?
Yeah, of course. And they've totally given me the green light to tell people to sneak in food.
How dare you? How dare you get more sponsors?
No. So what I've noticed is that it's pretty exact. If your showtime says like 6:30. The movie will start at 6:50. They have budgeted exactly 20 minutes of whatever beforehand. Like they're pretty much sticklers to it, I've noticed. On all the movies I've gone to recently, at the 20-minute mark, your movie should start. Minutes of the listed start time.
All this was to say that 2 hours flew by. Like I did not feel that runtime.
It's just a hair over 2 hours, 124 minutes. So 2 hours and 4 minutes, yeah.
Anyway, you guys in for Death on the Nile?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm down to see it. I honestly don't have high expectations for it. It looks like it's going to be a very clean and proper film, but I don't know if it's going to be the best thing ever.
Yeah, isn't it like a sort of continuation of like isn't there based on some sort of maybe older film franchise, but like Murder on the Orient Express. Isn't it the same? Like Kenneth Branagh is the same character?
It's Agatha Christie is the writer of that book. And yeah, I guess so. I guess it's the same. It follows the same detective. I'm not really... Again, I'm not too familiar with the whole... Oh, yeah, yeah. Is it Hercule Poirot? I think that's who it
that
is.
That sounds about right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, yeah, and this is Kenneth Branagh directing it, and he's going to be... The detective in it as well.
So. Yeah, the Kenneth Branagh special, directing and starring.
He can, you know, well, imagine a chameleon if half of them kind of sucked. Like, that's kind of what Kenneth Branagh is. He makes amazing films sometimes, and then he makes bad films the rest of the time.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm mildly interested in this one. I saw Murder on the Orient Express. I thought it was fine. I think maybe a little bit too long for its own good, but...
Oh, this is that Gal Gadot movie I keep, like, popping up everywhere.
Yeah, she's the female lead.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not too long of a runtime, apparently. It's just a little over 2 hours, so...
Okay.
Yeah,
but well, about, this is a fantastic cast, too. Like, this looks... I mean, again,
budget was $90 million.
That's it. Yeah, that seems pretty not sparse, but you know, it's not too bad. But yeah, I mean, this movie looks really fucking proper. It looks really, really nice. So, who knows? They're gonna be on a big steamboat, so that's happening. It's gonna be like the movie Maverick, I guess.
Or Waterworld.
Or even Waterworld.
Ooh.
Yeah, one can hope. You think they're going to have jet skis hiding underwater?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Steam-powered jet crocodiles. Skis. Crocodiles riding on steam-powered jet skis.
Yeah.
They need to do a Waterworld remake.
I think it's perfect the way it is, sir.
That was such a doomed production anyway, though. Like, have you heard about the budget overruns and how it took so long and, like, that giant fortress thing that they set up was destroyed and they had to build it again?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of those, like, barely able to finish the movie. Like, it was such a bad production. It was, like, doomed.
How about the Uncharted movie? It's on the 18th.
I'll check that out, too.
Yeah?
I'll check it out.
Yeah.
Oh, it looks like such trash.
Yeah, like it's probably going to be.
It looks like Pirates of the Caribbean, Fast and the Furious, like all of these franchises that, let's say, leaves a lot to be desired mixed up into one movie. Now, me and Dez watched a trailer, and I think it looks laughably bad.
Yeah.
You're still going to watch it, though.
It's made by Ruben Fleischer, who makes, like, the... I mean, most recently he's done the Venom movies, but he also did that movie Gangster Squad and Zombieland, 30 minutes or less. You know, not the greatest track record in front of him.
I mean, Zombieland, I like Zombieland.
Yeah, I mean, Zombieland's all right. And it's like, honestly, the Uncharted game itself was an attempt to make a movie. It's sort of like you're basically simulating a movie in which you occasionally have to input a few things to make your character not die. You know, like they're very cinematic in nature, like even more than like a the most recent Tomb Raider game I play did a very similar thing where it was sort of like you're waiting for largely for quick time events to happen. And then these big cinematic moments would occur if you did it right.
So there are games that pretty much are that even more so, like the Detroit Become Human. There was the Beyond Two Souls. They're essentially a video game with, they're essentially were a movie with quick time events.
Yeah.
So
I mean, at least
that's so bizarre. That's so bizarre to me. Like someone decided like that was the good. Like, remember all the worst parts of Resident Evil 4? Let's do a whole game like that. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, when I saw the trailer, it didn't seem offensively bad. It didn't even seem that bad at all in general. It seemed like it's a video game movie. Like, the bar is already set for us. So, I don't know.
I don't know. Resident Evil. I think Resident Evil set a new bar.
They did. Again, I really think that they way overachieved on that bad boy. Again, we were talking budgets, and it was like that fucking Pledge movie cost like $30 million to make. And it's like Resident Evil made it 21
years
million
ago
in today's dollars.
Right.
Which is probably like $100,000 back then.
They made it for $20 million, which means in 2000, they made it for like $8.
Right, exactly.
So that's it for the movies. The last thing I wanted to mention is there's one comic trade paperback coming out in February that I'm going to be picking up that I'm interested in. And it's a limited series. It's called Way of X. It's pretty much a Nightcrawler series. So I'm interested in getting that one. I'm not going to go on about it. I like Nightcrawler. He's a cool guy. And it's going to be dealing with a lot of like the more religious aspects of his character. Because Nightcrawler goes through a couple of different phases a lot of times, depending on who's writing him. Whether or not like he's like this fun-loving adventurer, like the kind of guy who would appear in an Uncharted movie. Or like this more like religious character who's like a bit more devout. So he's
we just found Tom Holland's next.
Oh, Tom Holland Nightcrawler. There you go. Think he can do a German accent? He probably could.
He probably could.
I actually think you go with the Dune kid, Timothy Chalamet. I think he's your if you need a Nightcrawler, I think you go him first.
Yeah, because Nightcrawler is Marvel, so if they bring it to the MCU, he can't do two roles.
Not with that attitude. I know, I think we're not going to go on about this again, but I think you do a separate X-Men universe, not the MCU. Yeah, you're making a face like it's going to happen, and I know you're right.
I agree with you.
But we both.
But that's not going to happen.
But we both know reality. There's reality as it should be, and reality as it's going to be.
Come on, we're going to get Wolverine saying bub in a quirky way. Just cracking jokes left and right.
He's going to smoke
cigars. Not taking anything seriously.
Drink some whiskey. Mr. Pointy
that's
Hands.
That's X-Man's ass.
Come get you. But I'm looking forward to it. I like Nightcrawler as a character. But anything else you guys think we need to address? We're going to pull the plug here. Are we done?
I think that's it for my end. Yeah.
I'm good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So next up is going to be the Pokemon show. We'll have the big breakdown of Legends Arceus. We are all buying it. Yes?
Sure.
I've already done it.
I guess.
Oh, yeah. I also have it pre-ordered. It should be delivered tomorrow.
Good deal.
So I'll be diving in. Mm-hmm. And then we'll do a mini show, and then we'll do another retro show, and then start the whole process back over again. That's it. That's the end.
Yep.
Till next time.
So long.
Sayonara.